we are talking about PCA, dimensionality reduction more generally. So we're trying to take our data and reduce the dimensionality, because dimensionality makes for sparseness and other unpleasant things. And we're talking about PCA, where what you try to do is you try to find these new dimensions to project the points to. And in the last lecture, I argued that looking at dimensions along which the variance is the greatest is a reasonable thing to do. And principal components analysis specifically is it equates those dimensions of largest variance with the eigenvectors of the covariance matrix of your data. So I guess very briefly, just what is the connection? Why are the eigenvectors? Why do they give you the maximum possible variance? Right. This is a very quick argument that shows that an eigenvector is actually what you're looking for. So now, think about what you're doing. You're selecting a dimension. So we're looking for dimension E, something like that. And what we want is we want the points. Once the points are projected onto this dimension, we want the variance of those projections to be as large as possible. So a way to think about this is, if this is your dimension E, a potential dimension, what a projection looks like, projection is just a dot product, right? You're gonna take E, a unit version, a unit vector E, and you're gonna multiply it with every one of your data points, x1, x2, x3, and that gives you a number. And that number is essentially sort of a perpendicular projection of x1 to dimension E, projection of x2 to dimension E, projection of x3 to dimension E. And what you want these points, x1, x2, x3, you want them to be dispersed as widely as possible, the variance of those numbers to be maximized. So why does that mean that E has to be an eigenvector? It's really relatively easy to show. So what we want to do is we want to maximize the projection variance, right? So what is a projection? Projection is a dot product. So that is our projection. That's X projected onto the dimension E. And then how do we compute? So this is a number. How do we compute a variance? We take a bunch of numbers, one for each data point I. We take one of those values, we subtract their mean, we square, and we add it up, right? That's just the definition of the variance. So one thing we can do right away is we can get rid of the mean mu, right? Why can we get rid of the mean? Well, the reason we can do it is our points, xi, those guys, the first thing that we did is we subtracted the means from everything. So the points are centered around the origin, right? So the mean in the original space is zero along every dimension. And it turns out that once you project them to anything else, the mean stays zero, right? Because projection is a linear operation. You can just change the order of the summations, and all of a sudden the mean is going to be inside, and it's zero by definition, right? So we can take mu and throw it away. So this is the variance. It's a sum over the data points, the square of the projection numbers, right? Each one of these is a dot product. So that's what we want to maximize. Now, how do we maximize things? We differentiate them, set our derivative to zero, and try to solve that. So we'll take this. This is our variance, and try to maximize that. The problem is we don't just do it directly. This quantity depends on the scale of E, right? So the dimension E, there's lots of vectors that lie along that dimension. And if you pick a big vector, the variance is going to be big. If you pick a small vector along that dimension, the variance is going to be small. So we want to keep the vector length constant. So we want the Euclidean length of E to be 1. So we have a constrained maximization problem. We want to maximize variance such that the vector stays at length 1. And the way we do that is you add a Lagrange multiplier on the length of the vector that you're projecting to. So now we can take this, differentiate it, and see where we end up with. Right. So I'm taking a partial derivative of that whole quantity with respect to EA. Now EA, E is my dimension. It's defined by a vector, and A is one of the components of that vector in the original space, right? So I'm differentiating with respect to that. Now, if you go through the math, I'm not going to dwell on this. I'm just trying to make a point. This is the quantity that you end up with. So the square comes out to the front, and you have two summations here, and then this whole thing collapses to just lambda times z. So lambda is your Lagrange multiplier on the constraint that E has to be unit length. And we can rearrange it slightly. What we can do is we can change the order of these summations now, right? This is just a sum inside a sum. So I'm going to take this outside sum, the one that goes over the instances. I'm going to move it inside, and inside of it, I'm going to have both of the x components, right? So this is the sum that goes over all the data instances. This is the value of the ith instance along dimension A, and this is the value of the ith instance along dimension J. And if you look at it hard enough, you'll recognize that you know what this is. This quantity is really nothing other than just the covariance between the A and the J. And the reason for that, of course, is our values. For the covariance, normally you would have to have the means in there, right? But the means are zero in our case. That's the first thing we did. We centered the data. So the means are zero. So this whole thing is a covariance between A and J. Right. So if you look at it that way, what does it mean? It means that the sum over all the dimensions of covariance of A with that dimension times that dimension in our vector E, it has to be lambda times E, right? So that is the condition where the this is something that you have to satisfy in order for the derivative to be zero, in order to maximize the variance of projections. And now, if you look at this guy, you realize that, well, this has to hold for every one of the attributes A, for every one of the original dimensions. Right. So another way to write this out is you have to have one of these equations for every one of your dimensions. And if you just arrange them underneath each other, if you write them d times underneath each other, each one of them is a dot product of something with something. Right? Each one of them is a dot product of our new dimension E with the row of a covariance matrix. So another way to write out all of these D equations is to say I have a covariance matrix sigma, and when I multiply it by the potential dimension E, the vector has to stay the same, because lambda is just a Lagrange multiplier, it's a constant, right? And this is a definition of an eigenvector. It's a vector such that when you multiply it by a matrix, it doesn't point in a different direction. It keeps pointing in the same direction. Right? So it's kind of a roundabout way of doing it, but I know that so some of you are better with statistics than with linear algebra. So this is one way to think about what PCA is doing. Right? Why is it the eigenvectors that matter? And that's basically the proof. So the dimension that maximizes the variance has to be an eigenvector. Just do that. All right. So what do we do with them? After PCA, what we end up with is we end up with a set of d eigenvectors, so d possible dimensions. So that doesn't help us very much. What we would like to do is we would like to have fewer dimensions than we had originally. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep a subset of these d dimensions. So how do we pick a subset? We can use an interesting property of the eigenvalues. So for each one of those eigenvectors, E1 through ED, there is an eigenvalue. And they have an interesting property that if you add up all of the eigenvalues, they give you the same thing as the trace of the covariance matrix. And the trace is just the sum along the diagonal. And what do we have in the diagonal of a covariance matrix? We have just the variances of each one of the original dimensions in the data, right? So one way to think of a trace is it's the sum of the variances, so it's maybe the total amount of variance that you got in your system, right? In the original d-dimensional space. So that is the same thing as the sum of the eigenvalues. And what we can do is we can try to pick the biggest eigenvalues, the ones that have the biggest values, in the hope that what that will translate to is that will translate to capturing most of the variance in the original data. So the way to do that is you reorder the eigenvalues and eigenvectors. You resort them such that the biggest eigenvalue and its eigenvector comes first, and then the second one, and then the third one, and so on. You have d of them total, and then you can try to plot a partial sum of eigenvalues up to m first eigenvalues out of d. Right. So this quantity, the sum of eigenvalues all the way up to d, that's the total amount of variance in the system. The sum from I equals 1 to m, that's the sum over the first m principal components. Right. And what you typically get is you typically get a graph like that, where you get lots of so this is the plot of this ratio. Right? So you get the biggest fraction of the variance with the first few eigenvalues, and then as you get as you take more and more and more principal components into account, you get smaller and smaller increments in the fraction. Yeah. No. Okay, so if the question was, does each eigenvalue equal to some variance in the original space? You can't really think about it that way. So an eigenvalue, it's a combination of variances from the original covariance matrix. It's the variance along the eigenvector, along one eigenvector. So when I'm taking two of them, I'm saying, it's the variance along that dimension plus the variance along that second dimension. And you can do that because they're orthogonal. The eigenvectors are perpendicular to each other. Okay, so you can look at a graph like that, and basically it'll go from 0 to 1. It'll start at 0 here, and once you get to d eigenvalues, you'll have all of the variance captured. But what you're hoping for is you're hoping that most of the variance gets captured with relatively few eigenvalues. So one thing you can do is you can set a threshold. You can say, I'm interested in capturing, say, 90% of the variance in the system, or 95% of the variance. So then I pick m such that when I sum up the m first eigenvalues, I get 95% of the total sum of the eigenvalues, which is the same thing as the total variance in the system. So does this make sense? You sort them in decreasing order, and you pick the first m such that they give you 90% of the total variance. Okay, so this allows you to pick a smaller subset of eigenvectors, and we'll use those as the dimensions of the new space. So what you want to do next is you want to change the coordinates. Now we've got one, our E1 through EM, these are our new dimensions. So what we have to do now is we have to take some new data points and project them into the new space. And projection is simple, you just use the dot product. So you take the data points, you subtract the mean, you center the data points, and then you do a dot product between this mean normalized vector of the new of a data point x and each one of the m eigenvectors. Right? So what you're doing effectively is, if this was your original d-dimensional point, what you're doing is you're taking that d-dimensional point, this whole vector, and you're dot producting it with the first eigenvector e1, or not the first one, the one with the largest eigenvalue. That dot product is a scalar, and that becomes my value along coordinate E1. in the new space. And then I do the same thing, I dot product it with the second eigenvector, and that gives me a second coordinate in the new space. Okay, you repeat it m times, you get with an m dimensional representation for a point, and m is a lot smaller than d, the original dimensionality of the space. Okay, right. So let's recap. This is a slide that sort of has the entire PCA on one slide. So what is PCA? We start with data that was high dimensional, so you know we can only draw in 2D, so 2 is going to be high dimensional for us. So our input was high dimensional and correlated, right? It had two variables that were effectively the same thing, we just didn't know it for some reason. So the first thing we do is we center the data points. We make sure that the mean along each dimension is zero, so they're nicely clumped around the origin. And what we're going to look for is we're looking for a dimension along which the projection variance is the greatest. Right? So we want the green line, because the points projected to the green line give us a nice spread of the projection. We don't want the red line. The red line makes two points that were far away in the original space, puts them very close together in the new space. So we don't want that. We argued in the first slide that we know how to do this. If we want the greatest variance, it has to be the eigenvector. So what we do is we take the data, we compute the covariance matrix, and then we compute the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of the covariance matrix. And by the way, it's relatively easy to do. So if you have a powerful enough language in MATLAB, it's just that. So this whole procedure is just that. Don't implement it yourself. Use a package. It's simple enough. So after you've got the eigenvectors and eigenvalues, what you do is you order them. You order the eigenvalues in decreasing order, and you pick m eigenvectors that correspond to m biggest eigenvalues. And the way to select m is, again, you look at the 90% of the total variance. So in this case, we only have two eigenvectors because it's a two-dimensional space to start with. So we have to pick fewer than the original dimensionality, so we can pick one. Right? And in this case, the one that's going to have the higher eigenvalue is the green dimension. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to project everything to the green dimension E. And the way that gets done is I just, E is a vector in some space, and I just dot product E with every single data point that I have. So x1 dot product it with E, that gives me a projection. In this case, I'm done because I'm projecting to a 1D space. If you are working in a higher dimensional space, then you would project to M of the eigenvectors, and you end up with an m-dimensional representation. So that's what you end up with. Your data is low-dimensional, 1D, and it's decorrelated in this case. And I guess what I'm showing there is these are the original dimensions, height and the rest. Right, that's how they are sort of oriented in relation to the new dimension E that I extracted from the data. Okay. Let's look at an example of how PCA is actually used, and this is an example that's tightly related to what you're doing in the coursework right now. So you can use PCA for modeling faces, and in fact there's sort of a cute name for this. It's called eigenfaces, right? And I don't particularly subscribe to that, but it seems to be a popular thing to stick eigen in front of something. Eigenfaces, and do you have other examples? So eigenfaces is a good example of this. So how does this work? You start with a data set of images. Every image, every instance is a face bitmap, and what you do. What you want to do is you want to so each bitmap is originally represented as pixels, and what you want to do is you want to reduce the dimensionality of those instances. So how do you do it? Each face is a bitmap, so you can sort of think of it as a K by K matrix, where each cell is the intensity of that particular pixel. So what are we going to do is we're going to unfold it. This is a K by K bitmap. So I'm going to take the first row and then concatenate the second row on top of it, and then the third row all the way down until the kth row. So I'm going to unfold the whole matrix into one K square dimensional vector, right? So this thing is really much longer than I'm drawing it. So the second component of this is just the second pixel, and the last pixel is the last component. So I'm just concatenating the rows together. So one huge vector where the values are pixel intensities. So what you do next is you get one of those vectors for each one of the faces in your data set. So let's put them all together into one big matrix. This is our K squared by N dimensional matrix. I have N instances, one for each column, one for each face. And each one of them is K squared entries long. So this is our data. Then we run PCA on it, which means taking this data, subtracting the means, computing the covariance, and extracting the basis, the eigenvectors and eigenvalues. And as the result of this transformation, you end up with this matrix of eigenvectors of M eigenvectors. So M is a lot smaller than M. It's unrelated to M. It has to be a lot smaller than K squared, because we're talking about the covariance matrix, which is K squared by K squared. So this is our set of M eigenvectors, which we selected. And each one of them is a K squared dimensional vector. So what we can do is we can play the same trick that we did here, only we can do it backwards. So we have this K squared dimensional vector. Now let's fold it. So take the first K entries, put it as a first row, second K entries, put it as a second row, third as a third row. And when you do that, you end up with something that looks like another bitmap, right? And you can actually visualize that. You can draw it in the same way that you would draw a normal face bitmap, and it might look something like that. So this is an eigenface. So, and what that really means is it's an eigenvector that I got out of the PCA folded into a K by K shape and visualized as if it were a bitmap. So it really is not a face, but it turns out that if you visualize it, we as humans see a face in there, right? And this is for just one of these. Once you repeat them for all M eigenvectors, you get a set of these face-like things. And each one of them is, so from the PCA standpoint, each one of them represents a dimension of variance in this data set. Right. And I guess from the visual standpoint, the way to interpret them is each one of them corresponds to some aspects of how different faces can, of how a face can vary in your data set. So things like slight movements, slight reorientations of the face, facial expressions, they will be reflected in these in these sort of prototypical images. So they're not faces. Think of them as sort of aspects that sit behind the faces. Another way to think about them is you can think of them as building blocks, right? So a face, one of these bitmaps, so this particular bitmap, it's just a combination of these building blocks. If you put a certain amount of this with a certain amount of this with a certain amount of this, and you put as many of them as there are as there are dimensions in your data, then you will actually reconstruct the original face. If you don't reduce the dimensionality, if you keep D, if you keep K squared eigenfaces, and you add them all up with the right weights, you will actually reconstruct the original face. So these are like building blocks for building faces out of them. So that's in fact what happens when you're projecting. So if you're taking a new face and you're trying to project into the eigenspace defined by these eigenfaces, what you're doing in fact when you're doing a dot product, you're coming up with a constant, and that constant tells you how much, what is the coordinate of this actual face along each one of these eigenfaces, which are dimensions, right? So, and then the resulting decomposition is that value of the coordinate that essentially becomes a constant. And what you can think of is you can think of this bitmap as a linear combination of eigenfaces with certain weights, and those weights are the results of the dot product. So you could say that this guy is the same thing as taking 0.9 of this, subtracting a little bit of that face, and adding a little bit of that eigenface, and so on, all the way through. So think of them as, at an intuitive level, they're building blocks for faces. You combine them to get an actual face. From a mathematical standpoint, they are dimensions of the new space that capture most of the variance in the data. So, and again, how many do you need? We have that, okay, that's barely legible, but we talked about that already. So the way to pick the number of dimensions is you look at the partial sum of the eigenvalues and see at which point are you happy with that. And you can get into curious games like trying to reconstruct a face using a limited number of these eigenvectors, right? So if I use just one, then the reconstruction is going to be just that thing. That eigenface by itself, right? That doesn't look very much like our guy, but it is a face, right? If I use all d of them, I will reconstruct the guy exactly. And when I use sort of intermediate numbers, if I use say 5 or 10 or 20 eigenfaces, I get a nice projection where the face gradually becomes more and more like the original guy. So you can play a few tricks like that. How do you use it? You can use it for face recognition. So if you perform PCA on faces and you project all faces to a lower dimensional space, you can then use the lower dimensional representation to measure distance between things, right? Or stick them into a classifier, which is hopefully what you're doing with coursework. And what's the reason you do this rather than use the original space is the lower dimensional representation, it's insensitive to some common transformation. So what it will do is it will forgive the slight differences in the facial orientation, it will forgive the slight differences in illumination that can fool the classifier if it were working in the original space. But now it's working in this low dimensional space where those things are sort of factored out. And hopefully it'll get better accuracy. So this is an example of, this is taking a new face, which is on the left, and this is the most similar face that it finds in the training data if you're using a PCA representation. And all you see is it actually does quite well. Almost all the time it pulls up the right guy. There are a couple of mistakes. So for example, here, I pulled up somebody else here. Pulled up somebody else. But in general, it's nice because what it's doing is it's insensitive to things like facial expressions. The guy has really changed his facial expression, but you're still pulling him up as the most similar example. So I guess one thing to keep in mind is when you're doing this, one thing that does happen is you are projecting everything into a space that's defined by these eigenfaces. And these eigenfaces were extracted from your training data. So if your testing data looks like your training data, everything is fine, right? So it'll take the guy and project him to just the right mix of eigenfaces. But if your testing face comes from out of domain, if your testing face has nothing to do with your training data, PCA will still project it into those eigenfaces. So that's an example of what happens. So these two guys are actually part of the training data, and their PCA representation, well, it kind of looks, so this is the reconstruction with a small number of eigenfaces. But if you take anything else, whether it's a face or not a face, and you project it into this new space, it's going to end up looking like a face, right? This, it's an it's a space of eigenfaces. It can only do faces, right? So anything you give it is a face. even if it really looks nothing like a face. It also causes problems if you're trying to recognize people and some of your testing instances just never occurred. They might be a face, but they just never occurred in your training data. There's going to be a problem with that. So what it'll try to do is it'll try to project them onto the people that were in the training data. So that's a limitation. It's a nice technique, but just be aware of what it's actually doing. I won't talk about this, but you can. So this was the face example. You can use PCA variants in other domains. So for a while it's been quite popular in modeling text. So you can take a bunch of text documents and try to analyze them and extract topics or these eigenvectors can actually be they're vectors of the vocabulary. So sometimes you when you look at them, they seem to make sense topically. Right? It's not particularly useful, but it makes for nice demos. Okay, let's talk about some practical things with PCA. So one thing that you have to be aware of is PCA is based on a covariance matrix. And covariance matrix is sensitive to large values along any one dimension. So one way to fool PCA quite badly is if you take your data set, you take one attribute, and you multiply all of the values by a huge constant, you know, by a million. So what's going to happen? That attribute will start to dominate the covariance matrix, right? So the row of that is just going to be huge compared to everything else. And if you do PCA, that will be your first principal component. So that's not always useful. So one simple thing you can do is after you've centered the data, if you normalize it by standard deviation, that sort of gets rid of that. Gets rid of that problem. On the other hand, that variance might be something natural which you want to model. So it's not a bulletproof decision. You actually have to you want to think about whether to normalize the standard deviation to a unit or not. But in a case like this, you would obviously want to do that. Another practicality of PCA is it projects to these new dimensions, but keep in mind, these dimensions are linear by definition. Right? So the subspace, that was nonsensical. The space that it projects to, it's a linear subspace that's formed by these eigenvectors. So what that means is, if you're projecting to 1D, you're projecting to a line. If you're projecting to 2D, you're projecting to a flat sheet, a hyperplane. Right? And in ND, you're still projecting to sort of a linear subspace of the original space. And that is not necessarily the structure that's present in your data. So we talked about an example like this, where you have, this is two-dimensional data, but it seems to lie along a curve rather than a line. So it's really one-dimensional, but along a curve. PCA cannot handle that. What PCA will do is it will try to find a straight line along which there is the greatest variance. Right? So it will not be able to capture data like that. And if you do it here, it's obviously not a very good method. There are ways to get around that. So you can try to transform your original space before doing PCA, but at this point you are probably better off not using PCA at all. Looking at something different. Okay, so another interesting issue with PCA: the technique itself is completely unsupervised. Right, you are working on a set of data points, and you're trying to find the dimensions of maximum variance. PCA doesn't know anything about class labels. So if your goal is classification, if you're trying to classify something, PCA doesn't know anything about the labels, so it might not pick the dimensions that are best for classification. Right? So here's an example where a different projection would be a lot better than a PCA projection. So I have a set of data points in here. PCA would look for a dimension of the greatest variance, so it would pick something like this blue direction E, right? Because when you drop the points onto it, you get the biggest spread of the data. But if it happens that some of your points are in the green class and some of them are in the red class, then this is a pretty bad projection. You start with a data that was basically separable, right? You can separate it along this line, but by projecting it onto this dimension of greatest variance, you are dropping all the points onto the same line, and now they become completely inseparable. So your classifier will now run on these data points, and it's going to have a very hard time separating the green class from the red class. In this case, what you would want to do instead is you'd want to pick some other dimension. So maybe this red dimension. And that dimension, actually, it's kind of nice in the sense that if you happen to project the points onto that dimension, all the green points are on one side and all the red points are on the other side. So your classifier would find it very easy to classify the data. So all of this just goes to say that PCA can produce projections that are completely unhelpful to some task that you're trying to do down the line. Now, for this particular case, there is a variant of PCA called linear discriminant analysis, which tries to do the right thing. So what it tries to do is, instead of finding a dimension of the greatest variance in the data, it says, hey, look, I have class labels, right? I have one class and another class. So rather than maximizing the overall variance, let me try to maximize the separation of the classes in the projected space. So there's lots of different ways to do that. In fact, at some level, all of the classifiers that we talk about, they try to do that, right? They try to form a hyperplane or some decision boundary which separates things. But you can try to do it with linear algebra. So you can't maximize variance anymore, but what you can try to do is you can try to maximize this quantity. So this is the difference between the means in the two classes normalized by the sum of the variances. So intuitively, what you're trying to do is you're trying to say, I want the means in the projected space. So suppose that this is a projected dimension. Right? So I'm picking this dimension, I'm taking all the data points, I'm projecting them down onto this. So there's going to be some distribution of the green points, and there's going to be some distribution of the red points. What LDA will try to do is it will try to spread the means as far away from each other as possible, while keeping the individual variances as small as possible. So it'll spread the mean, minimize the variances, so you have nicely separated clumps of data points. So it's similar to PCA, but what it's doing is it's trying to take advantage of the fact that you have class labels and you can define something other than variance. If you don't have class labels, then variances, it's not the only thing you could do, but it's as good as just about as anything else you could come up with. But if you have class labels, then you can actually try to do something more clever like this. I guess this is not foolproof as well. It's a linear projection technique, so it's going to make the same kind of mistakes as linear methods always do. You can always come up with counterexamples where this will actually be worse than the normal PCA, and this is a counterexample. If your data distributions, if the classes happen to differ in the variance rather than the means, then LDA will pick a completely wrong direction for projection. And in fact, the original PCA would be a lot better, right? So this is my red distribution, this is my green distribution. LDA will pick this dimension because that is the dimension that maximizes the difference between the means and also makes the variance as small as possible, right? Should be quite easy to see that. So LDA will pick this dimension, and in this dimension, the classes aren't actually very separable, right? You can sort of draw the line between them, but it's not going to do tremendously well. If you took the original PCA projection, you'd end up with something like that, right? PCA would just project to the dimension of the greatest variance, ignoring the classes. So you'll end up with two Gaussians, perhaps, on top of each other. But if one of them has a lot higher variance than another, and you are using a nonlinear classifier, the nonlinear classifier will actually be quite happy to operate in this space, and it will be a lot easier for it to do the right thing than if it were doing it in that space. So dimensionality reduction is tricky. It's there isn't a foolproof solution that always works for classification. It does what it's designed to do. It maximizes the projection variance. But usually your goal is not the projection variance. Usually your goal is classification accuracy or regression accuracy. And dimensionality reduction doesn't necessarily always give you the right thing for that. Okay. So let's summarize dimensionality reduction. Why are we doing it? The primary reason, it reflects our intuitions about the data. We prefer to think about the data as low dimensional. We like to think that there are a few underlying factors that influence all of the observations that we have. On the practical side, it results in a much more compact representation, a dense representation where you can count things more easily, where you don't have those problems that come from the curse of dimensionality, right? The fact that your space, that the number of regions in the space grows exponentially with dimensionality. So you're tempering for that. So it should be a smaller data set, it should be faster to process, you can possibly work with this data set without making silly assumptions like independence or symmetry or other things. So that's why you would use dimensionality reduction. Why would you not use dimensionality reduction? For many large scale applications, dimensionality reduction is way too expensive. So in many domains where machine learning is applied nowadays, are streaming domains where you can literally only look at each data instance a handful of times before you have to throw it away, just because of the volume of the data. And dimensionality reduction is sort of cubic by its very nature, so it's not practical. It also happens to it works reasonably well when you're trying to extract a coarse level structure of the data. So if you're trying to do classification like Hamm and Spam, where you have two large classes, or if you're trying to do digits, where you have 10 large classes spanning the data, it's a reasonable thing to do. If you have a situation where you have thousands of very fine-grained classes, odds are that the dimensionality reduction will actually do a wrong thing. So the performance of your classifiers in the reduced space will probably be a lot worse than it was in the original space. That's just the fact. And when you're deciding whether to use it or not, you should really think about what are the assumptions behind the methods. In PCA specifically, the assumption is that the subspace that you're projecting to is linear. So think about whether that's reasonable or not. You're projecting to a flat hyperplane. Is that what you want to do? Is that the best thing? Right. So I guess as a general summary, we talked about reducing dimensionality. Well, high dimensionality in general, it's problematic. There are different ways of dealing with that. We talked about dimensionality reduction, but I also briefly mentioned that that's not the only solution. Yeah, you have other ways of dealing with that, and most of them are sort of encoded in making different assumptions when you're modeling your data. And we talked about PCA in detail. So the big idea is you're trying to maximize variance along a dimension and a couple of examples. All right. So that's all for PCA. The next topic is we're going to talk about hierarchical clustering. But before I move on, any questions on PCA? Yes. Yes. Not really. I mean, it's sort of the negative. It just means that you're sort of you would negate the eigenvalue and flip it in the other direction. There isn't. It's just a direction. It really doesn't matter. Oh, yes, sorry. No. So, is the variance along an eigenvector equal to one of the elements of the diagonal of the covariance matrix? And the answer is no. One of your coordinates was multiplied by a billion, then yes. You've got your covariance matrix, right? So say that I have three attributes, so if I have the height, the weight, and the length. So these entries in the covariance matrix, these are just the variances. So this is the variance of the height by itself, this is the variance of the weight by itself, this is the variance of the reference by itself. So this is 3 by 3, right? The eigenvalues
Oh, I see. Okay. So, okay. I have to admit, I don't actually know the answer. I don't think so. So the question is the eigenvalue actually the variance of the eigenvalue?
Yeah, I think so.
You think so? Okay, all right.
I think that's
okay. All right. Okay. So I haven't actually, I haven't gone through that. So it's quite possible that you're right, especially if Charles is coming with the same result. Yeah, and that would be it. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Okay. So why aren't they scalar? No, the weights should. Why are they scalar? So we got a new face. Yeah, which wasn't in the training set. So this is a k squared dimensional vector. Each one of the eigenfaces is a k squared dimensional vector. You do a dot product. That gives you a
dimension along that coordinate. So your new face is a certain amount of that dimension plus a certain amount of that dimension plus a certain amount of that dimension. I'm sorry?
Oh, the noise in the images.
So I'm not sure how to answer that question. Obviously the noisier it is, the more senseless your results are going to be. If your input bitmaps are random bitmaps, then all of your eigenvalues are going to be approximately equal, and there's not going to be much information in that space. Sort of the whole point of doing it is, the whole point of doing eigenfaces is to say there are big important variations in the faces, and then there are small unimportant variations. By doing eigenfaces, you are finding the dimensions along which you're going to have big, important variations. And then you're throwing away the eigenvectors with low variance, which means that they're you're hoping to throw away the noise while keeping those big features. That's really good. But how it affects, the noisier the worse, yeah. Yes, so outliers, that's something that you generally want to do regardless of, you do it before almost anything else. If outliers add variance to dimensions that shouldn't have variance. All right, I think we should stop. Yeah, these are the eigenfaces. You have m eigenfaces. Yeah.
And
so each one of the vectors becomes an eigenface.
And when you have a test phase, do you do the projection on a single eigenvector?
No, you project
space
to all of them. You project to all m. If you project to one, you get a number.
Oh. So, but the m is where you choose from this.
Yes. When it's what?
When there are low dimensions, like in the case of Hochberg, because we have a lot of low dimensions. So I was wondering, if we reduce those dimensions, because the support vector can either be something reasonable, like as you said, it could be also misclassified instances. So it might be something really wrong. So how can we be sure that in a multi-dimensional case, if we reduce, for example, in the point of importance, we are sure that we'll get new support vectors, or whether they are good or bad, whether they are good support vectors similar to the classifier to improve its accuracy.
You really can't make sure. It's so the so the problem with dimensionality reduction is these are the techniques, they're disconnected from the classifier.